Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to Samuel Adams Returns. Those anti-federalists absolutely did get it correct. And we'll talk about a little bit more why, but I want to follow up with you, and yes, this is Tom Novolis, your host, from last week's program. A little bit of follow-up at the end. I mentioned that about the Puritan perspective, and that's what our founding fathers, especially the likes of Sam Adams, clearly understood in relationship to what is good government. On a whole, the idea of, from the time of Cromwell, what happened during that revolution, and forward, you have to understand that there were a lot of Americans in already the colonies, and that when it came to how do you look at government, good government that is supposed to be meaningful, well, there's a lot out there, and I'm not covering it today. I'm just taking a couple minutes to step into it a little bit. I don't know if or when I'm going to be able to truly follow up on this because there's so much already out there. And that is in relationship to good government has to, only way it's going to work, here it is, has to be from the idea, the format, and the belief that God is sovereign, period. When man brings himself up greater over every other man and God himself, you're never going to have good government. Never. It's not going to happen because man will always be that overriding component and want to be the master of every other man and woman out there. Or their false religions and sinful ideas like transgenderism, all of the other, that money even, economy even, when it's not brought into that perspective of the sovereignty of God over all things, then people will govern and do according to what? Their own intentions, their own desires, their own ideas. When we look at some of the very fundamental confessions, the Heidelberg Confession, the Westminster Confession, or the Heidelberg Catechism, Westminster Confession, that the root of the Reformation, the root of what the Puritans believed is in all things, as Paul talks about, all things for the glory of God. All things, all government, all economy, all things. And God is involved in all things. So that's a huge theological difference. And right now, in these United States in particular, the theology, the religion, is none other than wokeism. Simplest way to sum it all up. And it's sister goddess of environmentalism. So they're all tied together because wokeism has that ESG, you know, the environmental, you know, governance and all the other nonsense. So everything woke. I guess we could sum it up that way. Makes it easier for people. Well, we need a great awakening to the fact that God is sovereign. And that's what I was trying to really get to and use somebody smarter than me in Dr. Salazar in relationship to what he's doing. Yeah, so there's all that. There's all those other folks out there that, you know, you can go down that reference if you want to. So with that, I want to get to the meat of today's program because there was a lot going on. Kath and I sit back and we look and we talk about it and we sit here and go, man, it is amazing how fast evil will work when you give it that window of opportunity, when there are not people who have that right-mindedness, that right belief system, that right theology, then what happens is evil is like the goofy movie that's out there. I can't remember the exact name of it, but where it's this giant black spot that's out there gobbling up things. You know, it's a sci-fi movie. I think Bruce Willis is in it, and it's, you know, the only savior is Jesus, not some interplanetary redhead. But the fact of the matter is that that's how evil moves, fast, gobbling up everything in its sight, destructive. And that's what we have with the O'Biden administration. I use O'Biden because Biden is only part of Obama and all of the rest of the evil that we see consuming everything, education, churches, political systems, monetary system. So let's get into a little bit on J6 or the bonus army. Now, if you go to the promo at SamuelAdamsReturns.net for today, you'll read in there some of the points that I try to bring out. Now, I've talked about the bonus army in the past, and we'll talk about it a little bit more today, but I kind of titled the program this way, J6 or Bonus Army, the Senate bombing and the financial sector bombshells. Clearly, from everything that anybody with a brain or who is, I guess, talking to the choir on this program, January 6, 2020 was no insurrection. Nada. Flat out. Not. So we have to then consider also when we go through and look at J6, we look at the bonus army, the Senate bombing was a direct attack, actually bomb going off in the Senate building. How come the media doesn't go back and talk about all the leftists, the communists, the radicals that did that? They don't even talk about the Black Lives Matter people that destroyed portions of D.C. during their riots. So another one that I want to give you a link to, the link is there down in the references, is for shooting right there in the congressional chambers. Congressman being shot in the chambers. Now that is more insurrection, right? Really? You know, radical, getting in there. Wait a minute. And most importantly, and this is just from the first paragraph of today's newsletter, is that the financial sector bombshells started with 2008. And now we have the cluster bomb, that thing that explodes all the bomblets all over the place. And usually they actually have the UN and all these others are going, oh, you can't use those anymore because they leave behind landmines. They leave behind little unexploded mines that are killing people later. Oh my, that is the financial system from 2008, actually left over from FDR. And it is a debacle of our present. But we have to look at it from the whole idea, and we'll talk about it somewhere in today's program about it being the banking system that was brought forward in 1913. Fractional, the centralized fractional banking system is the problem. It's not what our founders intended for monetary mechanisms. You go back to the Anti-Federalist letters, and once again, I can take you through that, and it dissects everything. I mean, it gets down to the scalpel on the frog. Every aspect of cutting to that vein in that little frog leg that defines our present. Now, when I talk about the frog, well, modern American people for the last 150 years have been those frogs boiled in the pots of the modern education system established with John Dewey's help to the point of destroying the fundamentals of education that our founders wanted that would be God-centered, common sense, and what it means to be a citizen. But I've covered that before in other programs as well. So what I want to do is go through and make sure you understand the riddle in history when we consider January 6th. Great article there that I want you to go to if you want to read, if you know how to read, that is. If you want to read, go there, and it's called The Parliamentary Move Behind the J6 Fedsurrection, March 12, 2023 is the article. Now, you have to understand that what I like about this article is the fact that he uses the parliamentary motive. And remember, I said that parliament was a parliamentary mechanism, was exactly what Kozak said and used when the communists destroyed Yugoslavia. This is an interesting article that brings all of that positioning to destroy constitutionalism within the confines of what is allowed by the Congress in establishing their own rules. That was the mechanism to institute a parliamentary move in such a way that we could have a coup. Wow. I love this article. The highlights in it. You got to read it for yourself. You got to read it for yourself. I cannot emphasize enough to you, and you're going to have to go back to read Kozak again and my other programs on Kozak, because the tie points are so distinct, so perfect, that it had to make parliamentary moves with motives behind the J6 Fedsurrection. It was the federal government that did an insurrection against our constitutionalism. Wow, great article. I don't know what else I can emphasize for you to go read that. And it's there. It's in your references. It's right in the beginning of the article, the posting for today's program. So in this last minute, I want to bring you a little bit here. It's here's one from history for you. Are you ready for this? Here it is. J6. Keep J6 in mind. Here we are. February 13th, they're in there, they're taking and going through the electoral votes, they're counting for that election. February 13th, 1861, February 13th, 1861, and I quote, "A mob tried to break into the Capitol to disrupt the electoral vote count following the 1860 United States presidential election." Got it? Capitol security blocked their entry because they lacked proper credentials. Instead, the mob stood outside yelling insults at General Winfield Scott, who headed the Capitol security force. The mob's epitaphs included, quote, "Free State Pimp," end quote. Another one, "Old Dotard," and another, "Traitor to the state of his birth," end quote. You got to remember, Scott had been born in Virginia in 1860, everything that was going on there. Contemporaneous accounts describe the crowd as, quote, "a cauldron of inflammable material intent upon revolution." Wow. What about J6? How about 1861? Come on back for the next segment. Sam Adams, totally understood it all. Welcome back to the second segment of Samuel Adams Returns. Those anti-federalists did. They got it right. And I don't, whatever else you think or say. Let's get right to this. Is that we talked about J6 kind of at the end of the last segment, and now we tied in a couple interesting aspects, and I tied in for you an article that I am just enamored with, a really well studied. But let's think about what happened with the bonus army. You know, I left you off and what happened in certifying that 1860 presidential election, but that wasn't, you know, to the point of anybody got really, you know, crazy violent and all of that. But there was. I mean, they were right at the cuspice of, as it ended the article there that I quoted to you, a revolution. Now, what we have here is that with the bonus army, this was real interesting in the fact that these are World War I veterans that were supposed to be compensated. And the economy took a nosedive in the 30s, as many of you well know. And so as we were looking at everything that was going on in that time frame, we have to consider that no different than Ashley Babbitt, two veterans were killed in 1932 by the police there at the Capitol. I've written about the bonus army a couple other times, and so those links are there at samueladamsreturns.net so that you can go and look at what I've said. But what you have to remember is that thousands went to D.C. and set up a camp. They were in and out of the buildings. They were petitioning their senators, their congressmen. They needed to get paid early because the bonuses from World War I, which ended when? About, you know, 1919, by the time it finally ended. But they didn't get any monies, and the money was not going to be given to them until in the 1940s. What? Wait a minute. And these people weren't going to get a lot of money. Basically, those that, you know, were stateside and served, we're going to get about $500 and some. Now, $500 back in the 30s, especially during Depression, was a good amount of money. Those that were actually overseas in Europe and saw action, they were going to get about $600 and some. Again, not a lot of money, but they needed it. So they went to D.C. petitioning. And who was it? Herbert Hoover did not like this and wanted everything cleaned out. So basically, he gave an executive order and sent in Douglas MacArthur. He was the Army Chief of Staff, General Douglas MacArthur. And he went in exercising his freelancing, as he had done in a number of occasions, some to the benefit of the nation, but as we know, is that when it finally got to Korea, he got fired because of his freelancing. And the bottom line is he went in with six tanks, infantry with fixed bayonets, and the cavalry in addition to that. And they went in and drove the bonus army marchers, their wives and children, out of D.C. They burned all of the people's belongings and the shelters that they had built. Now, you got to remember that a lot of these people, when they went to D.C., they brought all their belongings because they didn't have anything because of the Depression. So here we have 1932. I want to read this to you because I thought it was kind of interesting. 1932. When the veterans rioted, an officer by the name of George Chenault drew his revolver and shot at the veterans, two of whom, William Hushka and Eric Carlson, died later. William Hushka, 1895 to 1932, was an immigrant to the United States from Lithuania. Now, I'm Lithuanian, part Lithuanian, so I really identify with this one. When the U.S. entered World War I in 1917, he sold his butcher shop in St. Louis and joined the Army. After the war, he lived in Chicago. He was buried in Arlington National Cemetery a week after being shot and killed by the police. Eric Carlson, 1894 to 1932, was a veteran from Oakland, California, who fought in the trenches of France in World War I. He was interred at Arlington National Cemetery. During a previous riot, the commissioners asked the White House for federal troops. Well, that was something different than what Nancy Pelosi did. And you can see that by reading the article that I talked about in the first segment and is there at the beginning of the posting for today's program. Nancy didn't want the troops, even though they were offered. So Hoover passed the request to the Secretary of War, Patrick Hurley, who told MacArthur to take action to disperse the protesters. Toward the late afternoon, cavalry, infantry, tanks, and machine guns pushed the bonusers out of Washington. And you can read that for yourself and even more at reference number one in the reference section of the posting at SamuelAdamsReturns.net. Bottom line, didn't need to get to where it got to for January 6th, but when we know sometimes, depending on who the commander in charge is, they go above and beyond what is necessary. So maybe there would have been a real lot of bloodshed on January 6th if, in fact, the troops were used and they were not standing on constitutionalism. We don't know. We'll never know. But we do know, even though it hasn't come out in the investigations yet, we do know the federal government was the culprits involved in stimulating the occurrences there at the Capitol. Okay, the Senate bombing. Let's jump over to that. The Senate bombing. I've talked about this before. You got to remember again that there's a lot of attacks. There have been a lot of attacks at the Capitol. So I have an article there in the posting that is the timeline of violent incidents at the United States Capitol. I mean, it goes way back to the beginning of the nation and some of the actions that have happened there. But one of the ones that I really want to bring out is that Bill Clinton actually freed the 1983 bombers of the Senate building. Those bombers, if you look at them, they were straight up radical weathermen, communist revolutionaries. They were the insurrectionists, the revolutionaries. They were trying to start it. Remember, there's communists all over in this country and have been for decades and decades. I've taken you through the history of communism in America a couple of other times. So when we look at this and we consider that you had communist weathermen, weatherwomen, and that we're not talking about people that, you know, point to the map and say the clouds are coming in this way and we're going to have rain tomorrow, or in the case here, we're going to have snow tomorrow, blah, 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 blah. No. We're talking about those radical communist revolutionaries, no different than the Black Panthers, no different than Black Lives Matter, no different than, professors on college campuses. You got to remember, that's where it started. Go back to Kent State, remember that. But here we have all this going on, and Billy boy, hey there, Bubba, he took and freed those bombers. He pardoned them. But go ahead in there in that article. It's pretty interesting that if you take and you check out some of the other links that are there and you look at what happened in 1954, I'm not going to take you into that, but you need to go read that on your own. 1954 and then in 1971. Was there another bombing in 1971? Was that the one that was earlier? Well, you have to go look. It's interesting. So, you know what? Nothing's new except for who stimulated the activities. Now, I'm not going to let that one go. You're going to need to go read that article. Let me see here. Let me jump over to this. Here's a quote from it that I love. And the article, again, is the parliamentary motive behind the J6 Fedsurrection. And here's something from the Truth, the Ring of Truth. That's what it's called, the Ring of Truth. The quote is from Edith Wharton, 1908. And she goes on to say, "I am too well accustomed to the taking of evidence not to detect the Ring of Truth." So it goes on, and within the questions, what goes on with the FBI? What happened there? You know, there's always been nagging questions about the why. Why did not the FBI communicate their concerns to the frontline troops? Why did the Capitol Hill complex not have a real perimeter set up? Why did Nancy Pelosi not accept all of those troops being offered by President Clinton? What are the whys? The who's, and I'm not talking about those folks there in that Dr. Seuss story. I'm talking about the who did it's there on Capitol Hill. And the who did it's, Nancy Pelosi, Vice President Pence, Schumer, McConnell. What was their relationship? What was it that they were bringing together? And the interesting component in that as well is that when you take a look and you see that just literally, and I'm reading this from an article that is doing a subset, they're doing a quotes from the article that I just mentioned to you in the Gateway Pundit. Here's a quote from there. It says, "Just moments, literally 3 minutes before two representatives issued a vote for motions to suspend the certification, the House members were informed by Capitol Police and other agents that protest was about to breach the chambers. It was at that time that key people, Pence, Pelosi, Schumer, and McConnell, can be seen walking out and escorted from the chamber. This effectively halted the entire chamber process." So with that, the two motions were completely legal and constitutional under at least two constitutionally recognized procedures, but the procedures would be require the House to pause the certification and then vote to determine whether the motion of suspension could move forward. But those never made it into the record, never made it to the House floor, never made it to a debate. And then, because of a declared emergency, which this was, a declared emergency, everything got wiped out and the existing rules suspended. And Nancy Pelosi could then come in and establish the rules by which she would rule. And then Pence could legally say, "Hey, I had nothing to do with it. There was nothing I can do constitutionally because of the House rules." Remember that program that I talked about, the old House rules and now the new House rules under this Republican-led Congress? Those old House rules were established for that moment in time. Ladies and gentlemen, Sam Adams warned over and over about what would happen when you had designing men and now women involved to the destruction of our liberties. We lived it. Come on back. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to this last segment of Samuel Adams Returns. This is Tom Navolis, your host. For those out there, I just want to let you know that please go to either, well, one of the three to take and watch this program if you want to. Again, you can always listen to it and download it at SamuelAdamsReturns.net and read the blog portion of it for today's program. But you can go to Rumble, you can go to Brighteon, and yeah, you can even go to YouTube till they kick me off of there to actually see my smiling face and watch the expressions that I have when I talk on this program. Also, for those that are in Lima, there with, I call it my Screaming Eagle friends, please go find the program and listen to the second segment. I think you'll find it extremely interesting and follow up on. And for those that would be interested, you still can donate, help out. We just paid some of our bills that we needed to, our accounting service and all of that. So we do have some responsibilities in keeping this program on the air. So any help that you can give, even if it's $10, $5, $10, that would be helpful. It would be greatly appreciated. But with that, talking about $5 or $10, you know what? We're right to what I was going to lay out for this third segment anyway, is the financial system debacle, the fiat financial system. That means, you know, the fake, the made up, the contrived financial system and all the bailout gibberish. When you go and you start reading all these, again, these laws that are for the benefit of the financial system, you know what? You, as a citizen, have no benefits. You have no real protection. You are, as I talked about last week and the week before, you're living there with Alice in Wonderland, going to all the different tea parties and everything else. And in fact, and so many people out there are plugged into the matrix and are happy to be living in that which is being designed for them. Once again, government becomes their God, that which they are wholly and totally dependent on. And that's what government wants to do. That's what it wants to be. Versus what God wants for us, to know Him, to love Him, to be those that would do according to His purposes for humanity. And it's not all the liberal wacko religion ideas of it. No, there's very specific biblical ways of dealing with it. And I covered it in the beginning of the program. It begins with what we would understand from the fundamentals of the Reformation and the implementation of those truths by the Puritans in government, in finance, in society, in personal life, in education. It's all covered. Anyway, let's get on to this financial fiat, this fiat of a system. And I don't know, we're not going to get into the gibberish a whole lot, but I like what I wrote. I wrote this thing here. I thought I got a little creative, so a little fun with it. For those that aren't going to SamuelAdamsReturns.net, all the yellow bricks are not gold, but do lead to China. They do. Yeah, and I'm not even going to get into the ideas of corporatism because I put there in the posting, you know, three programs that I talked about corporatism, even in the, I'm doing this with my fingers, the air quotes, on a little c, Christian churches that are involved in corporatism and are okay with it. But, you know, the fiat financial system, bottom line, if you have not really thought about it, which I'm sure many of you do, is that it's criminal. It's theft. Our taxation system, the way that it has been designed, is theft, as well as bailouts for banks, especially those that I want to focus on right now here, is that this Silicon Valley Bank, SVB, Sierra Victor Bravo, they took and they fueled China startups. So right off the website, here you go. When China was still new to venture capital in the late 90s, SVB was among the first financial institutions to start serving the country's startups. Why traditional, risk-averse banks avoided them. Over time, the bank has become a popular option for China-based startup funding in U.S. dollars, as well as some China-focused U.S. dollar venture capital firms, end quote. That's right off their website. So, hey there, Biden. Why do you not call up the chairman of China and say, hey, chairman, seeing how it's your venture funds, it's your companies, how about bailing out Silicon Valley Bank? Do you think the guy's so gutless, all these lefties are so gutless, they don't have the intestinal fortitude, let alone, oh, you know what? That's the transgenderism out there in the political system, is they have no testicles? Oh. Well, let's just say it like men would say it. They have no balls to do what is right. I'm sorry. No intestinal fortitude to do what's right. Anyway, I think we had a little fun with that one. Enough. So when you look at what SVB's page has, you have to remember, once again, Bill Clinton was president of the United States and was giving China all sorts of stuff. He gave away secrets. He gave away reactor secrets. He even gave away, because I was jumping up and down about this in the 80s, he gave away some of our technology for quiet propellers on submarines. Yeah, people forget about all that stuff, but, you know, a lot of the people weren't alive in the 80s now, and all especially these young radical punks. I'm sorry, they are, but that's their professor's fault, their parents' fault, the church's fault. All right, back to Bill Clinton. So, when you think about that, he was there at that time. So, let's get here to our present president. Senator Biden's words of July 18th, 2000, during the hearings on, and I got the link there for you, giving permanent normal trade relations status to communist China, national security and diplomatic, human rights, labor, trade, and economic implications. I got the link to the whole report for you. This is what was going on in the Senate at that time on July 18th. And this was what Mr. O'Biden was, well, can we say O'Biden? Let's see, was Obama in the Senate at that time? Go figure that one out. But O'Biden, because that's what he is now, this is what he had to say. Listen, I'm going to quote from that document. Right, we're going to quote from that document. I, for one, am quite ready to adjoin this issue and am frustrated that we are not doing that on the floor of the Senate. Looked at one way, granting permanent normal trade relations to China has little to do with our national security. PNTR for China does not lift any sanctions on China. It does not increase their access to controlled U.S. technology. It does not increase their access to our markets. And that is because the U.S. already grants China normal trade status on an annual basis. And we have done that every year since 1979. Granting permanent normal trade relations to China is all about opening their markets to U.S. goods and investment. From my perspective, and trade concessions are all one way in this deal. Ha! Little did we know, he and his family were going to make millions off of this. No wonder he was in favor of it. Wow. Wow. I just like go back into all of these various documents and you sit there and you go, whoa, puppy, what were we thinking? Well, we're not. That's the point. We don't think because we've elected those who will do what is right for us. Let me do this. I'm following more of what I have there posted for you. And again, the references are there. But you see, in the days of our founders, especially during that period in the early years, in 1765 in particular, the people gathered in town meetings and gave letters of instructions to their elected. We don't do that. We elect some yo-yo, the majority are. We elect these yo-yos to go out there and do what we think they're going to pay attention to and do correctly. But no, they're bought off by the lobbyists and all of that. So I went ahead and I was looking for some information about money and the money systems of the time. And what I found here was out of the instructions of the town of Boston to its representatives in the general court. And this was in September of 1765. And you have to remember that there was a war that had gone on. And this is what it says here, that Sam Adams was the primary author of this. Quote, "And in the late war, more especially by their surprising exertions, they have brought upon themselves," and this being England and the king and the parliament, "a debt almost insupportable." Stop. Where are we with all of that right now? And now we're doing this stupid, Ukrainian thing. "And we are well assured that if these expensive services, for which very little, if any, advantage hath ever occurred to themselves, together with the necessary charge of supporting and defending His Majesty's government," no, Biden's government here, "had been duly estimated, the monies designed to be drawn from us, we the people, by this act, would have appeared greatly beyond our proportion." Ladies and gentlemen, I don't have enough time to go into any more of that, but you have to understand there's nothing new in history. It's the mirrors of history. What we're seeing here is the reflection of what occurred in 1765 with the Stamp Act and all of the other egregious acts. And you know what? Our founding fathers did not put up with it. But we're so dumbed down, we just fall right into it, except for a minority. My friends, first of all, what you need to do in actions is to put the sovereignty of God first, see that there is reformation in your church, pray for it, challenge those who do not put the sovereignty of God first in every aspect of life. Sam Adams did, so come on back next week when Samuel Adams returns and the Anti-Federalists got it right.